Welcome to episode 212 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jace, and today I'm joined by Tommy and Marty. How are we, guys?
Going very well, thank you, Jace. Very exciting times in the world. Elections in the US, people punching each other, just getting it on. Jeez, I love the US. What a circus. But it's very entertaining. But we've got Tommy in today, which is really exciting. Tommy, of course, is our legendary producer. A big shout out to Nick and Alicia because they have had a baby. So I won't give too much away because I'm sure Nick will want to have a chat about it. But I went to the hospital, saw the baby. She was gorgeous. I never seen Nick so just happy. Even when commissions rolled in consistently and financial performance of the business was going well, I've never this transcended that. I never thought I would see it. And Mum is doing really, really well, and so is Bub. So yeah, very happy for them. Tommy, you're a fantastic replacement. Welcome to the show yet again.
Thank you, Marty. I've just got back myself from the US, so yeah, been away for 7 weeks, and so I've been a part of the circus you're talking about, Marty.
What was it like on the ground, like being in the US during that election build-up? What did you hear much about it in your travels? What did you find?
Side note, just for everyone who cares, I'm really well, thank you, and I also just got back from the US not too long ago. But anyway, straight to you. So don't worry about asking me how I am, guys. It's all good.
Jace,
all
good. Just shut up for a minute, Jace. I just want to talk to Tommy for one sec.
It's not about me. It's not about me.
We were there at the same time, Jace. We were on the text. You were in Chicago and I was
Marty
somewhere else.
Marty doesn't care. Yeah, we were.
I was in Churnside Park, so I don't really give a shit, to be blatantly honest.
You were doing a physical marathon and I was doing a filming marathon. Yeah, it was full on. The purpose of being there was to film a documentary about the Second Amendment and American gun culture. And so it's probably closely linked to politics. It is. I know it is. But it was a full-on experience driving from California all the way over through weaving around, ending in Florida. And it's just nothing like it. The political energy is so prominent. Like, you're just visually seeing it everywhere. Trump had so much support. You could totally tell he was going to win. I mean, you'd probably, like, just actually the signage and just people, what they were saying, it was all roads leading to a Trump victory. Mm. Even we went to a rally for Kamala Harris in D.C., Washington, D.C. And, yeah, I just got a sense that it was very much just driven on hope, not necessarily reality. Marty, it was a great time, though, to be filming a documentary about guns and also in the lead up to the election.
So what made you want to do that, Tommy? What was the motivation around doing your documentary? That's interesting in itself.
Yeah, well, there was there was a team of seven of us that went across, and we had it privately funded. And basically, you know, in the behind the scenes, you can either have a documentary greenlit by a network that then means you can get funding to go and produce it, or you can go a private funding way and have it created and then you sell it. And so we've gone down that path, and so there's no single way to do it right. Yeah, long story short, built out a team, seven of us went across and filmed for over 50 days across America.
What an experience. Was there anything that surprised you based on what you learnt that you didn't know?
Oh, you'll have to watch the documentary when it comes out. But it is not the sort of picture that I don't think that Australians have. It's a very unique situation that they face when it comes to guns, gun violence, you know, freedom. And so it is uniquely American. And I think more people are on the same page than you'd think. You know, we met people that had been shot in mass shootings. We met people that had killed people in self-defense situations with firearms.
Gee.
Met people that just like to have firearms and would never think about using it. It's only a last resort. But there is probably more in common than you think. You know, the person that was a part of the mass shooting in Vegas, you know, she'd been shot in the face and the back and the arm, and she doesn't want guns removed. And that was mind-blowing to me, just to think that that's someone's you know, opinion after something like that had happened to them. And so, you know, it's very nuanced. And yeah, it's just not black and white.
I still remember hearing about the Port Arthur massacre, like in real time, how horrendous that was. And obviously we cleaned up our gun laws after that. But do you think we would ever be in a position in Australia philosophically to go back to that time on a practicality based on what you saw in the US, or are we just so far now removed from that culture? Is there any practicality to that in the US as to where that works, like sort of an organized chaos that people know where they stand and it kind of works?
Yeah, I mean, it's just rooted in their history. It's, you wouldn't choose to go that path, but no. That's not to say that they should do what we did. You know, it makes sense to remove guns, which would lower gun violence just based on sheer numbers of firearms, but that's just not a reality. And so, yeah, it's we're not going anywhere in that direction, but they have to have different strategies to, you know, come up with solutions and ways to prevent this, you know, gun violence from happening, you know.
So I think in Australia we hear all the statistics that stick with us, and you know, the couple that I kind of grabbed before the show to discuss was, you know, there's a mass shooting on average in the USA every day, compared to in Australia we've had 3 mass shootings since 1996. So you go just straight out, like when you just look at a stat like that, you go, oh, guns are a problem. Whereas, I mean, what you faced on the ground talking to people about guns, they don't sit there and think guns are a problem. You know, I'm assuming the vast majority of the American population, because it's just not the way they're wired to believe, to think. And, you know, they go, the death rate is 12 people per 100,000 in America versus less than 1 person per 100,000 in Australia, death by guns. So, you know, when you put it that way, I mean, it's still dramatic. But, yeah, I mean, when you're over there, Tommy, did you see a big difference, I mean, state to state? And I mean, it just blows my mind. I mean, in those stats alone, you know, do they think about it like that? Or when they find out that Australians don't carry guns, do they think that about Australia as well? On the flip side, they can't believe that we have a world where we roam around without guns.
Yeah, they do. But that's because they're not in our reality. And so while it's not on our minds in a day-to-day way, over there it's just, yeah, it's such a different ball game. And so it's it's hard because statistics say one thing and then emotion says another. You know, when you look at school shootings, it makes up 1% of the deaths from firearms, but it's 99% more emotive than, you know, hearing about a bloke that killed himself with a gun. And the reality is that 60% of gun deaths are from suicide. And so there's a mental health crisis over there. You know, we went to a primary school in Alabama that had a whiteboard on the wall that pulled out and became a bulletproof shelter for kids. And so, you know, that was so emotional. Like, I've got young children and I take my son to school every day. And so, yeah, it was, but that's a guy who's invented that because he wants to try and save lives. But it's hard to understand because then you know, as an Australian, you go, well, just get rid of the guns. You don't need them. Then you don't have to use those stupid, you know, whiteboards. But it's like, we came into encounter, you know, with a whole bunch of people who have come up with strategies and ways of protecting people from harm from guns, but they're definitely not in the way that sort of your mind works and says, well, it wouldn't be a problem if you got rid of them all, or if you, you know, enforce legislation harder. Like, those things are so roadblocked and difficult when you have so much of the population that actually wants to keep a firearm. So it's very complicated, and it's hard to even just explain, you know, all these things that I'm trying to tell you. You know, we spent a month, more than a month, 50 days, on the road. And so that's what the documentary will explore, that sort of Australian lens on the American challenge.
And was the struggle real, like in regards to everyday people? Was what was coming back at you? Was it a challenging time in history?
Yeah, definitely. The situation on the border, just hearing, you know, firsthand what Border Force go through with the migrants coming across, and like some of the stuff they were telling us, I was saying, like, you realize that sounds like a conspiracy. And they're like, I know. But in all, there was a very optimistic view of the future from most people we spoke to. I asked most people that question, are you optimistic about the future of America? And most people are. So I don't know. It's time will tell, though.
It will. So I guess then that probably leads us into one of the other major changes in the US beyond the gun documentary. Actually, before we roll on from that, when can we expect to be able to get access to view this gun doco? Is there a bit of a fair way away? We're going to be dragging this on for a bit?
Yeah, next year. But then again, that's pretty close. Hopefully mid-next year we'll be out on a streaming platform.
Ah, incredible. Love it. Yeah. Well, I do have a friend that works at Netflix. I did do a tour of the Netflix office in New York while I was over there. Jeez. So, you know, got friends in high places. So let me know if you want an intro. He's actually heading up the ads division, or part of the ads division at Netflix. So love him or hate him, he's the reason there's ads on Netflix, and they're trying to make your subscription cheaper.
Is there ads on Netflix?
Yeah, might just be US-based, but I think they're rolling it out. They're rolling it out across the world. So if you want to have a cheaper subscription.
Oh, yes. $5.
You can opt for the cheap subscription, and they have ads on there.
Would you do the cheap subscription, or you pay the premium to get rid of the ads?
I hate ads. So no, I'm not his target market. So, you know, Bart is a big listener of the Numbers Game as well. So I'm sure when he does have a listen, he'll have a good laugh of us talking about him. But it was pretty cool. I mean, like, Chicago versus New York. I mean, it was my first time in Chicago. Greg and I ran the Chicago Marathon a couple of weeks ago. As you said, like the feel and vibe in Chicago, you know, from, you know, the Italian food, the clubs and bars, it did have a bit of Melbourne vibe to it. Mm. The Trump Tower was phenomenal. Like, you're kind of coming up the Chicago River and there's this giant Trump Tower that just pops up out of nowhere. So, you know, Trump's everywhere at the moment. But that was really cool. Then you get to New York, and I mean, again, like, just the American way, and, you know, the subway system and all of it. I mean, I'm always kind of a bit of a comeback from America with a bit of a why can't we just have things that make sense, like the ability to tap your Visa debit card or tap your phone to get onto the train, like, or a tram or whatever. Like, people come to Melbourne and they're like, what's a Mikey? What do you mean I have to top it up? What do you mean if I don't top it up, I can't jump on? Like, can't I just touch my phone and pay you money to ride your public transport system? Mm. Bizarre.
And then even cost of oil, like gas for your car. It's, you know, under $4 for a gallon.
Gallon.
Which is 3.7 litres.
Yeah.
And so you're looking at petrol around a dollar. They do have some things worked out, but they also have a whole bunch of unique challenges just based on the amount of people and that sort of difference in all of those states.
Yeah, big time. I guess we're going to lead this a little bit sideways, still American themed, into Trump being back in power. So I guess straight off the bat, Tommy, you were there, you saw it coming, you saw the volume of the numbers, the masses, the excitement around it, so you might have had a better feel. I guess, Marty, for you, being back in Australia while Tommy and I were gallivanting around, what was your take and vibe on it as the election led up?
Yeah, well, I had the feeling he was going to win as well, just from what I was seeing. But that was, like Tommy was saying, it's pure judgment off not much substance, really, because I'm not really a political person. But I just thought there was a strength that was needed, regardless of what that means. But I think that it just generally come across as strength, and it sort of held throughout. And I think with Biden just being so, like, misplaced in the end and not really being able to function, I didn't think Kamala really had a chance. She didn't have enough time to build a case. But to me, I just thought that, I thought he was going to win, and that's what ended up happening. And shares went up by 2,000 points, which is very capitalist. But people were predicting that. They were saying that we needed something, you know, stronger in the economy and things like that. So it's amazing how, I mean, the share market is a very emotive game sometimes, and it hears what it wants to hear for the next few days, and it shoots up. As to whether it will hold long term is another thing, but it's amazing how speculative that is. Going, that person gets in, it goes up, that person gets in, maybe it goes sideways, who knows? But I found that fascinating in itself, because the financials didn't change in 2 days.
No,
yet share
no.
value went up quite substantially, which I found incredible, really.
Well, I mean,
what do you think? What do you think? Like, to me, I'm being here in Australia, I feel pretty safe. but I do love the US. I went to Boston and New York. I've been there before. I find it really interesting. Like, I find it fascinating how different states are. So I find a fascinating culture, but I do love being in Australia.
Yeah. You know what? The first thing that comes to my mind about loving being in Australia is not having to tip. The whole tipping system really, like, you know, just irks me or freaks me out a bit. Like, you know, you got your bill, then they add taxes, and then all of a sudden, you know, you got to add 20% for a tip. And if you don't add 20%, you're a jerk. And it's just
do they automate it now? Do they sort of pre-automate it now, or is it still like handing off a tip?
Basically, no matter what you're doing, there's a machine that they can flip around, or it sits there and it's in your face going, you know, like 18%, 22%, 20-something percent. And then if you want to tip less, you got to click custom, go through a process. You look like an asshole because, you know, you're trying. And then you're stressing because there's a line of people behind you with wanting you to hurry up because they want to get their bagel and their liter of black sludge. And they're kind of going, so, you know, you end up getting to a point where you just bugger it. You just click the button and pay the tip, or you quickly hit no tip and run and hope that, you know, you don't end up with spit in your bagel. But no, I did tip when I was getting service. I think people who live in America, like my friends that have moved to New York and live there, they're much more accustomed to, well, no, I click no tip. If I'm getting takeaway, I haven't been provided any additional service where I've needed to tip. So no tip, get my takeaway and I'm out. But if you're dining in at a restaurant or actually getting served by someone, then of course, yes, paying the roughly 20% tip is part of the parcel. But yeah, I think once you're over there for a little bit, when you're on the Aussie dollar, you just have to get to a point where you forget like that the US dollar is different. You just pretend everything is the same as the Aussie dollar and you go about your life. And you come back and deal with it later when you see the credit card. On the Trump thing though, similarly, I mean, you see the odd like celebrity endorsement, but at the end of the day, you know, the momentum behind what Trump was doing and what was coming out, you know, of all the states. A lot of people have asked the question in the process of this to me, and, you know, in a role as an accountant and looking after businesses, like, oh, geez, Trump's back in. What does that mean for Australia? What does that mean for business? And, you know, I just sit there and think of it and go, well, Trump's been in before, right? Like we've been through this. 2017 to 2021, Trump was the president of the United States. And, you know, while maybe we're a little bit distracted because 2020, 2021, we were locked up dealing with COVID. So maybe we weren't thinking about the effects of Trump on the world, or maybe it just didn't matter. And I think that's what I've been trying to say to, you know, business owners here that have asked the question, family, friends, is that we can only control our controllables, as we've talked about before. We're in Australia. We're probably sheltered from a lot of what happens. But when I looked at some of the things, you know, major things that happened with Trump, you know, which I'd actually love to see here, was corporate tax rates got cut. So on average, corporate tax rates went from 35% down to 21% while Trump was in power. So while that's great for business investment, it wasn't so great for the US deficit and US debt, which we'll touch on those numbers shortly. Obviously, Tommy, you talked about the border and the immigration policies. So, you know, Trump's very big on keeping, you know, USA protected from immigration. So that was, you know, some big things that he was trying to do in that area. And a lot of stuff around trade and tariff policies with China, which is going to happen again now. There's already lots of talk in the media about, you know, making America great again means making sure that Americans are using American products and not so much relying on the trade with China and things from China coming into the country. So before I go any further, anything to add to those couple of points, Marty or Tommy?
For me, it's like the corporate tax rate of 21% was, you know, that was something. But again, I think it's, you know, in general, you try and think, are people better off as a whole? And that's the thing you can't answer. Yeah. you just don't know enough about it until it's done. You can only look back in hindsight and make those decisions. So I'm just fascinated to see how it plays out because it's pretty direct. And to me, either there's got to be some substance in what he's, you know, what he's pitching and delivering, and that will only be known when we look back in 4 years' time. But until then, it's like the jury's out, right? But so it's, for me, it's a wait and see approach. But Tommy, what about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it was business as usual the next day after he won. But I was back in Los Angeles, Venice Beach, and it felt pretty normal. I hope, you know, somehow he does good for the country because it is an amazing country. And I've been going there for, you know, over 10 years, and I love it. That's why I, you know, ended up making the documentary as well, because it's the part of the story is two Aussie guys that just love the American way and American culture and all the things that it brings. Yeah, it will be interesting to say. My mate does, he's Australian, lives in Florida, and I am slightly jealous because he has a 3% interest rate for a 20-year mortgage locked in.
Wow.
So, yeah,
so, totally so
he didn't get it when it was 1% or 0.25%, then he missed out on the good ones.
I'll settle for three.
No.
You would 100%. Never move, would you? You would just, you'd ride that until you could. It's, I think the other thing for me was when listening to Trump speak and understanding the history from the 80s, he's a deal maker. So whether that's an advantage in, you know, particularly that type of economy and in various different things. I think he's, you know, he strategically brought in Elon Musk and was it Robert Kennedy as well on health, which I thought was interesting, whereas I thought the Democrats brought in entertainers. And I think that was an interesting mix as well, whether it was right or wrong. But, you know, J-Lo's trying to talk down Trump and stuff like that. And she's got an unusual history as well, right? But it's like, it was just, I'm just fascinated with the tactical, you know, plays between the two parties. So for me, it was sort of a watch and learn more than anything. But one thing I do know is that when, you know, he is a deal maker, and I feel like particularly with some of those superpower dictators that are in the world, sometimes you do have to match fire with fire, as long as there's some sensibility around it, someone doesn't push the wrong button because they get their nose out of joint, right? So that's the sort of thing that concerns me. If it's an extreme and there's a disagreement, it can be pretty volatile, but sometimes you got to meet power with power, and for some reason that can form some sort of relationship that can work as well. So again, the proof will be in the pudding, but I don't think being a deal maker is a bad thing in this type of situation when things need to get done. But we will see. We will see. Yep.
100%. One of the last points that, you know, was may see some carry through, there was a big US climate policy reversals as well. You know, there's meant to be this go green climate change kind of around the world. Everyone's got onto this Paris Agreement. America and Australia are in the top 15 countries per capita for carbon emissions. Obviously, in Australia at the moment, they're going down the flight path of all of the top companies at the moment have to report their carbon emissions and then basically get the data from all of their suppliers and they're through the chain. So but just to see in that aspect, I think there could be some stuff in the next couple of years that relates to the policies around climate. But we'll watch and see that. The other ones that we might want to keep an eye on, I've got some numbers around where we're at today from the US just government debt, interest rates, and what we want to do for our listeners, because you know that we love numbers and Marty especially loves numbers. So at the moment, as of today, the US government debt is a touch over $35 trillion or approaching $36 trillion. That's a big number, we know. Wow. It's hard to
come on, Victoria. We need to lift.
that number actually equates to 120% of the US GDP. So wow. their debt is bigger than what their country's capacity of
that
domestic
is scary
product is. So
stuff.
It's a big number. It's huge. So this year they're expected to add another $2 trillion to that number. So the deficit is growing. Interest rates, I think we were fact-checking this before, Marty, around 4.5% at the moment. They've just had a rate cut. Is that correct?
Yeah, they had a 0.5 down and I think another 0.25. So, yeah, they're starting to come down.
Yep. And one thing, if we compare, Australia's talked a lot about inflation being an issue, and the reason we drove interest rates up in Australia was to try and get ahead of our inflation numbers. They've been steady and coming back slightly, but we haven't seen a dramatic decrease from an Australian inflation point of view. The US actually got on top of their inflation really well. The levers they were pulling obviously had more of an effect. They peaked at 9.1% inflation in June 2022, and they're now back to 2.4% in the September 2024 quarter. quarter, which is about what the Federal Reserve's target was. So keep an eye on inflation too. Be interesting a year from now, a year of Trump back in power, what happens to the debt, what happens to interest rates, and what happens to inflation. We'll keep an eye on those numbers and what happens. But yeah, anything else there you want to unpack, Marty, or any other numbers I might have missed that you want to know?
I just think that they hiked more aggressively on interest rates when the inflation was out of control, and it was out of control. And we've probably not been as aggressive. We could have possibly been more aggressive to bring inflation back. But look, I think the way it's going, we will see some rate cuts next year, and hopefully that will provide some sanctuary to people doing it tough out there, because it certainly is a challenge at the moment. So so probably a softer landing for us. But we need a bit of momentum in the market and put people on a good scale.
Marty, those numbers, how do they stack up against what the state is of Australia at the moment?
Interest rates, inflation's back to, I think, take out all the energy rebates and everything, it's still at 3.5, but overall, and they still want to get that down below 3, but I think if we cut out the energy rebates, it was below 3 on the last inflation read, which is a good signal, but it's still a bit high to where the RBA wants it. So I think I don't think we'll see any rate cuts by the end of this year. And there's some speculation that February still might be too soon. We're doing okay. Unemployment's still good. We're at low figures on that. There's not really a dramatic increase there. So we're sort of steadily working our way through it. But I do feel like that we had a lot of immigration come in with a lot of money that we're spending, that needed to spend when they come into Australia. And, which would have kept inflation going on that spend. And I think, the people that are obviously here every day are certainly feeling that pinch. But the fact that it's dropping, given the amount of immigration we've had in, I think is a good sign. Like, I think that spend now is under control, and we should see some relief coming into next year. So I'm just seeing it from the finance side more so. I'm not an economist or anything, but that's what I've been reading, and I've got my fingers and toes crossed, because I feel like that will be needed relief for everyday people, that's for sure.
Yep. Australia's government debt numbers, $534 billion, making up 43% of our GDP. So
pretty good in comparison, even though it's a high number. Yeah. But and when you compare 122%, that's workable.
Yeah, 100%. And then cash rate, very similar, 4.35% for us, around 4.5% for US. Unemployment, 4.1% versus 4.1%. So actually real similar numbers. So it'd actually be interesting. Yeah, Tommy, we'll make note, we'll punch it into our diaries that a year from now we compare Aussie economy, what changes happened, US economy, what changes happened, and we can really get our geek on with some more numbers for the great numbers game listeners out there.
There you go. November, let's mark it. 2025, we'll back with the comparison app.
Done. Looking forward to it. Well, I reckon it's come to that time of the show. It's been great to have you on, Tommy. Always excited when you're on as a bonus co-host for us. It's probably one of our most requested things through Instagram messages. It's we need more Tommy. It's the same two people every time, but they constantly berate us about getting Tommy back on the show. So while we are excited to have Nick back in the next couple of episodes, Tommy, you're a fantastic addition to the show. So thank you, Marty. It's been great to have you. For all of our listeners out there, you keep coming back. We love it. Keep on liking, subscribing, sharing. Check us out on YouTube if you haven't jumped on to watch a full feature length show on YouTube. Tommy does a fantastic job stringing together clips to try and make us look as good as possible, and we appreciate all of the listeners out there. So until next time.
It's been great to know everything about the US in this podcast, but if you want to know what's going on around Lilydale Lakes, just give me a call. Game over.
This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed.